You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody, and happy Tuesday afternoon to each and every one of you. I'm Maggie Dawn, host of The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. On occasion, I get to actually maybe take a breath with our guests, especially our frequent guests and collaborators. This afternoon is going to be highlighting two such women that I really wanted to spend some more time with talking to invite you into the conversations with us. And their names are Angela Lang, the Executive Director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities. She's going to be joining me for the first good bit of the 4 o'clock hour. And then right before the top of the 5 o'clock hour, very excited, I'm going to be joined by Capital Times reporter Paul Fanlon to talk about a big addition to the Idea Fest lineup that the Cap Times has been hosting for the last few years. Lots of big marquee folks already on the roster, but an even bigger one, in my opinion, added today, or at least announced today, none other than the amazing Stacey Abrams. So we're going to talk with reporter of the Cap Times, Paul Fanlon, about that. Really excited. And then at the top of the 5 o'clock hour, I'll be joined by Senator Kristen Dostler-Alfheim to have a discussion about, okay, so the biennial budget is done. What does all of this mean now? And a bigger conversation about, what do Democrats do to respond? How do we resolve good faith disputes, differences of perspective within our own party and not destroy ourselves in the meantime, not provide opportunities or easy wins for MAGA, given the stakes that are at issue nowadays in every single election cycle without exception? Angel, we're going to get to that because I want to engage that very same conversation with you as well. I think it is the question. It is certainly a question I grapple with every day when I get on the radio. How to talk about things, how to maybe give some footholds for people to engage, to disagree, to agree, but to try to keep building the tent, build bigger, maybe even better. But I wanted to start with a little bit of what I'm going to call maybe entertainment news. Two huge passings over the last 2 days. Of course, Ozzy Osbourne, the founding member, front man of Black Sabbath, passed away today at the age of 76. First OG Black Sabbath member to pass away. Man, I thought that guy, given all the hard living, I was like, he made it to 76. I figure he's going to be the George Burns of heavy metal and live for nearly forever. That passing, and of course, Malcolm Jamal Warner yesterday in a tragic drowning death off the coast, I believe, of Belize or Costa Rica. I'm forgetting the exact headline. At the ripe old age of, I think he was like 50, 51.
Yeah, something like that,
I was so shocked. I mean, Theo Huxtable was the brother that I always wanted growing up. And you grew up in the era of the Huxtables as well. And I just thought, first of all, if you had thoughts about the actor, the person, Malcolm Jamal Warner and his work, either after The Cosby Show, but also just the sort of setting aside, which is very difficult to do, Bill Cosby's complex legacy, tarnished, disgraced, however you want to put it. But that show stood for something completely separate, special, and different for, I think, at least two generations of kids. I consider myself one of them. What did it bring up for you, like hearing that he had passed away and just thinking back on all of this?
It was hard. When I saw the notification on my phone, I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
No, especially in these days where, you know, there's AI and fake news and people get killed off like all the time. And I was like, wait, what? Because it just seems, you know, so shocking. And I think everybody kind of had those flashbacks to the Huxtables and Theo. Yeah. And it was, you know, either it was the brother you wish you had or, you know, the guy that you kind of crushed on, your TV crush a little bit. But I also feel that, like, he just had a warm, I mean, I've obviously never met the man.
Yes.
But he's just very warm and very kind and, you know, very much for the culture and for the Black community. And I think also understanding what the Cosby Show meant for so many people. There was this positive, you know, nuclear type of family that was successful. And you saw this portrayed in a sitcom in a very beautiful way of like their family unit together, you know, in the age of Full House and, yes. you know, all in Friends and all of these different things, right? It was good to see, you know, The Cosby Show and, you know, all these other kind of Black TV shows. But I think, you know, again, putting the reputation of Bill Cosby aside, you saw kind of that family unit. And they don't really make shows like that anymore. You know, that and like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and being able to see a positive Black family unit be celebrated on TV and to know that he had a hand in that. It just feels like a big hole of our childhood is gone a little bit.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, Blackish from Anthony Edwards, and there's other mm-hmm. shows out there. I love Wanda Sykes' program, but that's on a streaming service. What I think you're speaking to was the fact that that was must-watch television. Mm-hmm. It was on one of the major networks. There were no streaming services back then. Everybody I knew, everybody watched The Cosby Show and watched the arc of these young people growing up, right? And there was something about the longevity of the program mm-hmm. and the relationships that we all got to have, especially with the young people, right? Like, that was really what drove that show. There was this rock, this relationship, of course, between Felicia Rashad and her character and Bill Cosby and his Dr. Huxtable, right? And she was Attorney Huxtable. Mm-hmm. That was certainly a big part of that. But for me, it was this, like, deep emotional investment in these characters and their journey of becoming young adults. And mm-hmm. I was at that sweet spot of age where, like, a couple of the kids were just older than me and a couple just younger than me. Mm-hmm. And so I got to then watch when they shot, you know, like when A Different World started and these offshoots from that. And just, I was nostalgically very shockingly sad when I didn't think that I would have reacted that way, but it really hit kind of hard. And I think a lot of folks do this. I wonder if you experience this from time to time as well. Again, nostalgia forgets a lot of the bad, or it, like, you know, sort of lionizes this very uncomplicated picture that we had back then. And in the context of current day politics, like, would that show even get made?
Probably not. Let's be real. If it did, you know, it would be protested, or Trump, it would be too woke, or, you know, MAGA
something.
Would get a hold of it in some way, right? And so it's, you don't see those types of shows where you feel like you're an extended part of the family, even, you know, every time you sit down and watch with your own family and what that was and the lesson at the end of each show. And I wish there were more, not just on streaming services. Like, I feel like I rarely watch regular TV shows that come on week to week. You know, I'm rewatching whatever on Netflix these days, and it's great, but it's not to the same audience. It's an audience that you have to, like, opt into, right? Versus, oh, this is what comes on, you know, ABC every Tuesday at 7, right? It's more of a mainstream, broad audience that you just don't see that space like that anymore.
Yeah, well, RIP to both Malcolm Jamal Warner and Ozzy Osbourne, and condolences to their families. These were two totally different universes.
Yeah.
Like, foundationally important people in so many people's lives. Really, really sad. Also in breaking news just this afternoon, a panel of federal judges has rejected former Trump defense attorney Alina Habba as continuing on as an acting U.S. attorney for New Jersey. In addition, on the Epstein front, Mike Johnson has effectively shut down the House of Representatives for the summer to avoid them having to take potentially uncomfortable like, why is this an uncomfortable vote about Jeffrey Epstein? It's not. It's a pretty easy vote. But that going on. And this announcement today, which got my eyebrow way up in the air, was that Todd Blanche announcing via X, of course, Todd Blanche working as the Solicitor General, I believe, apparently is going to be sitting down with Ghislaine Maxwell, of course, Jeffrey Epstein's co-defendant is the best way to put it. Pimp? No, pimp's wrong. Wrangler, perhaps trafficker. Yes, that might work too. What exactly might Todd Blanche and Ghislaine Maxwell be talking about? Pardon?
What's the goal
anybody
here?
Pardon?
Like, what are we doing here? What are we doing here? That's all I have. It's like, what are we doing? What's the goal? Who asked for this?
Yes.
I don't understand.
It's so strange. And just job title correction, he is the Deputy Attorney General, working, of course, with Pam Bondi. Just creepy. And, you know, I've been slowly trying to figure out how I want to talk about what's going on in Epstein, because it's in Epstein Gate, because it's so big and it's so pervasive. And I'm going to revisit it some more, but I feel like I don't want to get into the nitty-gritty of it every single day. Ugh. Just a couple of other headlines, and we'll take care of some business. Then Angela and I, and you, are going to engage in the hard talk, which is we all have a different political bend. How do we come together to really ensure that Democrats win, and that we win in service of making life better for working people? What does that look like? Are they policies that we can universally get behind? How do we make these things tangible for real folks? We're going to discuss that with Angela and you on the other side. Get your calls and questions and comments ready. 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Just a couple other headlines, Angela. Wanted to get a quick reaction or two. Apparently, a shirtless man was attempting to open Priscilla Pratto's door. She is a state representative from Milwaukee. There's not much more than that, but that's creepy.
That's the whole article. It's like, weird.
Here's half-naked dude on her ring.
It's a weird picture. Too. I don't know. I'm gonna get
yes.
It. I have questions.
You shouldn't have. Please don't be knocking on your state representatives. No, that's a bad look for you. This guy especially.
Weird.
Don't do it. Very strange. Also, the Trump administration could delay or cut $140 million in funding for overdose data to action grant, which will be hitting rural communities in their prevention of overdose deaths hardest. In the state of Wisconsin, some communities worried that their prevention collaborations will have to shut down. We're going to leave it there. We'll be right back on the other side after these brief messages. The conversation continues. I'm Maggie Dawn. She's Angela Lang. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join my special guest, Angela Lang, and I this afternoon for what I think is the most challenging discussion happening in political circles these days. And it is that, I mean, I have a collection of headlines just from the past few days. Does Mom Donnie, and of course, if you don't know who this is the young man, a Democratic socialist in New York who beat Andrew Cuomo in the New York City primary to take the slot as the Democratic primary opponent to sitting Mayor Eric Adams. Cuomo apparently toying and announcing that he will, in fact, seek the mayorship as an independent. So something to watch there. That's one headline. Craig Gilbert, in a special to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, his headline just in the last few days, how Wisconsin exemplifies the weaknesses of both the Democratic and Republican parties. If you want it more from the national stage, James Carville, offering a fix for confused and leaderless Democrats. Here's the problem, as I see it, within the Democratic Party. And there are all kinds of different catchphrases for this, but I will put it in a nutshell, which is an artful one because it is a nutshell, so nobody get mad about my nutshell, but just to set it up, is the incrementalists and sort of the centrists and the revolutionaries and the people that want more change faster and arguably can say, I think, to centrists and incrementalists, we've tried your way. How's that been going, right? And what is the way for Democrats to move forward while being able to engage in what I'm going to call meaningful debate about what the priorities should be, how hard we should push for them, and what areas of compromise are acceptable within the party, in private rooms, but also in the public sphere? One such version of that debate has recently exploded into statewide politics. I hosted Senator Chris Larson on this program last week. You can check out that episode if you missed it. I thought it was a pretty provocative, interesting, and thought-provoking discussion because I was trying to ask the senator this very question. Why? Because he is the only Senate side Democrat and one of the only Democrats that are not already sort of out loudly saying they are the far left contingent within the assembly to openly, directly, and at length criticize Governor Evers and specifically call for him to not run for a third term. That is what is novel about Senator Larson's position. He ties much of that back to longstanding policy differences, specifically being most recently focused in the budget and what was left on the table from the policy priorities of Democrats. I couldn't quite get the senator there to try to have this conversation with me. It's a difficult one, I don't know what the answer is. And I'll just say this, and then I want to just let you talk at it a bit, Angela. I am a bit of a cynic, and when I see elected officials take very hard lines or promise things that I know in reality are extraordinarily difficult to do without a broad coalition, I always have to find myself wondering, is this more about an individual's ambition or the actual values or policy objectives that are being offered? Why don't you set this up in your viewpoint and in your frame, Angela, and then we can bring it back on the other side and really get into it.
I have notes. Yes.
I'm
really glad we're having this conversation because I think this is supposed to be an honest, I think, dialogue of how we move forward. And I don't think enough people are leaning into this conversation because I think it still feels very raw for folks, especially the November election and pointing blame. First of all, I want to say shout out to my state senator, Chris Larson, for being the one to start to have some of these conversations. I think your assessment of kind of like this change of pace of, you know, some people want to burn it down now and some people are more incrementalist. I think there's also just like a difference in policy too, very, very specifically, right? Whether it's about policing or Gaza or what have you, I think that there's just some fundamental differences. So it's not even, hey, we agree, you know, you're just doing this in a different strategic way. It's just, we don't even agree that we are going from point A to point B. So I think that's part of it. I'm gonna get a little in the feels. I think progressives and the left are, we're dreamers. And so we like to dream outside the box. We like to be creative and think about what's possible, even if it hasn't been done before. And I think that can be incredibly scary for establishment type of folks to try to envision and build a completely different world that we've never seen before. And I think sometimes Democrats negotiate against themselves. I think we've seen that in the budget, you know, and people are frustrated with that. And so if people are are trying to push, I think it's incumbent upon the Democratic Party to not count out people who may be a little bit more left. How do we also embrace them and not be like, oh, you're the silly radicals, we're not going to talk to you, because that's not going to help anyone.
Heard on all of that, folks. She is Angela Lang, the executive director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities. And one of the great things about this program is you're going to find Democrats and progressives of all different stripes coming together, as well as conservatives on occasion, those that are brave enough to join me, to try to have exactly these kinds of conversations. Join this one on the other side. How do Democrats continue to push for the change that we know we see? More equity, more justice, not less. Are we doing it fast enough? Where are the results? And how do we move forward to beat MAGA? 855-752-4842, 855-756. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got a great guest with me. Her name's Angela Lang. She's the executive director of Black Leaders Organizing Community, also known as BLOC, here in Milwaukee. A self-styled progressive advocating for more rapid system change. Angela and I are trying to convene what I think is one of the more challenging political debates of the moment. Basically every day, and I don't care which newspaper you're picking up, which news magazine it is, or which talk show you're turning into, there is some version of how do Democrats unite to beat Trump and the MAGA movement? That is the question. And everybody seems to have some sort of different formulation and different answer. There are versions of appeal more strongly to the base. Don't talk about centrism and incremental change. Center economic issues, center working class issues, center economic inequality and inequity. Others say that we need to take on stronger positions, like the genocide, if you call it that, in Gaza. By the way, don't think that's really debatable. That we need to take stronger stances and talk more meaningfully about police reform and what that looks like in rebuilding trust between community, not just in police, but institutions writ large. So all of this is on the table for Angela and I this afternoon, and also for each and every one of you. 855-752-4842. And Angela, right before the break, you kicked it off with two of the biggies, the war in Gaza and police reform. It's interesting when we look at the candidacy of Mr. Mamdani in New York City, those are the two number one areas of critique that you hear from more mainstream Democrats. Hakeem Jeffries has been hesitated to endorse Mr. Mamdani. Hat tipping to those two issues and some of Mr. Mamdani's languaging around those issues. These are challenging questions at some level, especially when you get beyond the is this right or is this wrong? There are longstanding laws of war that are comprised of various international treaties. There's no question if you talk to legal scholars that Israel has violated many of those in its engagement, including concepts like proportionality, that you use the least destructive means to achieve the end, all sorts of things. Of course, Hamas and other terrorist organizations aligned with Hamas have done just as bad, worse, over a lengthy period of time. So these are two of the issues that I think are very activating on the left and that are often used by the right to divide Democrats. Mm-hmm. Certainly, I think you saw some of the impacts of that in turnout and the engagement level of younger voters mm-hmm. in the 2024 cycle. Angela, let's take a couple calls. I want you to react to the callers, and then let's re-engage. But those are the contours of our discussion. Hop right on in. Water's warm. Angela and I want to hear from you. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Brian from Oguanago, say hi to Angela. What would you like to share?
Hi, Angela, and thanks for taking my call, both of you. I have two really simple yet really big ideas that could help the Democrats. Number one would be to please be more authentic, as in, mm-hmm. please stop talking down to us or condescending to us, because mm-hmm. we're not dumb. We, you know, and basically the language of that's like, that's your politician language, where you get up, mm-hmm. stand in front of a microphone, talk for 20 minutes, and you never say an actual thing. Mm-hmm. So that's number one. And then number two, please, please, please stop taking money from foreign entities, foreign governments, and please stop accepting policy written by foreign governments and foreign entities. And I think you both know what I'm referring to. And that's all those are my two big ideas. Thank you.
Thank you. They seem simple. Right? Just be authentic. Get people to like you. That used to be how campaigns were run. And I'm not surprised that this is one of the first things that came up. And myself and good friend of mine, State Representative Francesca Hong, she had mentioned one time, and she was on a show, that there's this kind of elitism, right? And I remember the first times I really noticed it with the Democratic Party was actually a while ago when folks were knocking Scott Walker for not graduating and having his degree. Mm. And the way Dems jumped on it, it's just like, wait, hold on. There's a lot of Dems that actually don't have their college degree. Watch what you're trying to say, trying to make a jab at Walker, when there's people in your own base that also have that. Similar to how we talk about Donald Trump's felony convictions, the way people talk about felons. Oh, this felon is terrible, and being a felon is this, and that. More than just Donald Trump, this rich white man, are used with that label felon. And I think sometimes when folks are trying to take shots at these folks, they don't also realize that they're being condescending and undermining folks that also have felonies or convictions, because we know that the criminal justice system is inherently biased. So I think that there's some times where people just want to focus and take these shots at these individuals, but it does come across very elitist, not understanding that there's other people that are not just Scott Walker that don't have college degrees. So maybe, knocking him on not having a college degree is actually doing more harm than good. And I thought that was like a tangible example of the first time I really saw that Democratic Party elitism.
Well, and being extremely transparent, having been adjacent to or explicitly within government, political actors, elected officials, judges, etc., what I can say to you as a freaking certainty was that I had many conversations with a whole wide network of people at different career, like, pivot points in my professional life. And I was told straight up in different ways, listen, you're never going to get hired by thus and such sort of think tank, or they'll never pick you up to run a representative's office or to run a senator's office because you did not attend an Ivy League university. Mm. And oh, by the way, Maggie, it doesn't matter that you're a lawyer and economist, the degrees aren't from the right place. And oh, by the way, Maggie, do you also know that Republicans will hire anybody that they think can do the job? Mm-hmm. And I heard some of that going back to like the mid-2000s, mm-hmm. that there is has been, and I think that whiff, stench, waft, I don't know, steaming pile of not just elitism in some form, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. a particular brand of coastal elitism that didn't come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, look at where folks, look at somebody's staff, look at where they went to school, and you might get a drift. And that's not to knock people that went to those universities. They're incredibly bright. But it's just to say it's a stupid litmus test, because those people, those institutions don't have a monopoly on good, smart people that have good, smart ideas.
Yep.
Likewise, the barometer of a college degree.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think the thing that people wanted to talk about related to Scott Walker was career politician.
Right. Right.
You talk about bootstraps, yet you dropped out. Oh, by the way, you cheated when you ran for student council, allegedly, at Marquette, and then dropped out. Like, it was more the sort of trying to point out the hypocrisy in many Republican positions without condemning large swaths of your own base. Right.
And I don't think that happened. that messaging kind of fell flat. And again, I saw it, well, you know, after Trump's felony convictions. And thank goodness there was like some article where someone was like, hey, watch how you all talk about this. Because, you know, Trump is just a rich, you know, older white guy. But there are cousins of ours, family members, loved ones that are also playing, you know, placed with the same label as felon. So what you say about him in terms of being a felon also reflects on my own family member. And I am kind of proud that people, I think, got that memo very quickly and kind of stopped using that language. And I was going to say, too, you know, in terms of the Harris campaign, I was very curious to see how they were going to talk about his convictions. Were they going to do the same thing where it kind of insults, you know, voters? And it turns out, you know, they walked this very fine line of talking, you know, talking about the type of crime that he did, you know, and it wasn't the same type of stuff that we can identify with.
And then you start thinking about that, right, Angela? And you get into the, oh my gosh, have you now overscripted your candidate? Oh my gosh, are they stumbling around with it? Do they not sound
like they're
authentic?
And then no longer authentic.
Correct. Yeah. Right. They don't sound like a regular person, because would a regular person be like, ah, look at this guy?
Yeah.
These are this is the stuff. This is what makes it difficult and challenging. Kurt from Madison, say hello to Angela. What do you have for us?
Hi. I think my spin on this is talking in a sense of just straightforward basic. Can we all agree that we want clean drinking water? Can we all agree we want air that we can breathe and not set off our asthma? Can we all agree that education should be affordable? Should we all agree that we should have health care that sustains us? I mean, if you were having people in a room, in an auditorium, and then I was standing up there with my dry erase marker and saying, okay, start throwing out things that are, you know, the top three things that are important to you. I think that, and I'm going to pick on Jeffries. He loves to talk with his hands and stuff. He comes off so condescending, and talk about talking down. It drives me nuts, and it just doesn't drive me nuts. It's a conversation with others that say the same thing. I can say that about many people on the Hill, but Democrats need to just stick with the basics and say, if you want clean water, then we need you to vote for us. Because this is our agenda, clean water, clean air, clean food, reasonable housing, reasonable education costs. I mean, that it's what they call, right? Everybody says it's what's talked about at the kitchen table. Well, then stick to the things that are talked at the kitchen table.
You know, Kurt's got his finger on something. I think Trump is absolutely brilliant in sort of the vagaries of policy.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And nothing that Kurt said and nothing that Senator Larson said when he articulated what he wanted to see in the world and what we should be accomplishing with our state budget. Not a single thing came out of his mouth that I disagree with.
Right.
My question was only, how do you know what was actually within the zone of possible in a given negotiation? You don't. Sure. That's the nature of negotiation. And at base, in a system that I think most of us agree has not been well as a two-party system, that's what you got. And it's like that is the challenge when you don't have full control. There's also, of course, the question is, if we do continue to see map improvements, what becomes possible? And how do we prioritize that? Angela, last thoughts. We got about 30 seconds left.
You know, I think a lot of the things that we just talked about that we all agree with, they're basic things, but there are some people that call them radical. And I think that is a problem. Asking for basic affordable housing should not be a radical thing.
Yeah. Angela Lang, ED of Black Leaders Organizing Communities. If you're enjoying this conversation, keep around, because we're going to pick it up with State Senator Dessler Alfheim at 5 o'clock. Coming up next, we talk about the announcement of Stacey Abrams for Idea Fest in Madison.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome, everybody, and welcome back. If you're rejoining us, my name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, we've got Paul Franlin of the Capital Times because he is the publisher, and they announced a really big addition to the Cap Time sponsored Idea Fest, which is happening this September in Madison. Welcome to the show, Paul. Please share with everyone your big news.
Okay, well, thanks, Maggie. Thanks for having me, and it's a pleasure to be on the air. Today we announced, as we ramp up our completion of the program for our September event, the addition of Stacey Abrams to our lineup. She'll appear on our stage on Tuesday night, September 9th, and we're very excited about it.
Yeah, absolutely huge get. You've got J.B. Pritzker. You're going to have Norm Eisen. You're going to have tell people about what Ideas Fest is and who else they can expect to hear from this September in Madison.
Okay, well, a couple seconds of background. We created Idea Fest 9 years. This is the 9th annual Idea Fest, and it's mostly concentrated on the University of Wisconsin campus and Shannon Hall at the Memorial Union. And we bring in powerhouse lineups of national speakers, and also deal with. We also have sessions on local issues. So this year, our first big get was Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota,
yes,
of course, and former vice presidential candidate. He'll be on our stage Friday night, and J.B. Pritzker on our stage Saturday night.
Amazing.
And so those are two huge gets. We haven't announced yet our speaker for Wednesday night. That'll be coming soon. Stacey Abrams is our marquee speaker on Tuesday night. And Monday night, our marquee speaker is the Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for New York Times, Maureen Dowd.
Yes, Ms. Dowd, big fan of her work. You're going to have all sorts of commentators and speakers there. These sorts of convenings, Paul, I think are more important now than ever, and perhaps more important in places like Wisconsin, more now than ever. And to me, I hope it is an opportunity for Democrats and folks that want to see more justice, not less, less corruption, not more, and that want to see greater economic opportunity spread further, to come together and exchange literal ideas, as the Idea Fest title implies, about how to do that. Because lots of well-meaning and good faith people have different ideas about the hows. And I think it's important to be able to facilitate these kinds of discussions. What do you hope, Paul, as the publisher of the Cap Times and this, the convener, if you will, of Idea Fest, what do you hope attendees take away from the experience?
Well, I hope they take away a better understanding of the gravity of the issues that face us and come away a little bit inspired. And that's generally what the response is. Last year, we had Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi and Liz Cheney, of course, fighting as hard as she could against Trump and Trumpism. The year before, we had Adam Kinzinger. William T. Ebbew created the Capital Times 108 years ago as a progressive beacon in the spirit of fighting Bob La Follette. And this is our way of one way that we're taking that spirit forward by convening people and giving them an opportunity to get excited and educated and enjoy hearing from these world-class speakers.
Yeah, it's going to be quite the lineup. Again, you've got Maureen Dowd, Stacey Abrams, Governor Walz, J.B. Pritzker. Who else might folks be familiar with that they're going to find at Ideas Fest this fall?
Yeah, we do a special event we call a Celebration of Journalism on Thursday night at the Edgewater Hotel. That's smaller, and it's more expensive ticket, but it will have. First year we did that, we had Carl Bernstein, and the year since last year we had Peter Baker and Susan Glasser, husband-wife team, Baker of the New York Times, Glasser of the New Yorker.
Yes.
We had Al Hunt and Judy Woodruff the prior year. This year we have Eugene Robinson, who's a spectacular Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist late at the Washington Post. He left the Washington Post, and a lot of us know the backstory of what's happening there.
Yes.
And the moderator is David Marinus, who is a dear friend and longtime supporter of the Capital Times, who's been integral in IdeaFest since the start.
That's just amazing. How do you think, you know, let me just ask you, you're the publisher of the Cap Times. It seems that in the last 6+ months, almost every week, there is another headline about a longstanding legacy media company doing something, settling some litigation, canceling some show. I have no idea what I could be talking about this time. For not acceding to directives from Donald Trump, the political candidate, where do you think we sit in sort of the health of democracy in this moment, Paul, when it comes to the importance of the independence of the Fourth Estate?
Yeah, I think we're in the most perilous position we've been in, and I've been a journalist for about a half a century, so. It's the worst position we've ever been in. And, you know, you combine the forces of the like we call it euphemistically, the disruption of the newspaper industry with Trumpism, and things are never been worse. And that's why, you know, I'm proud to work for a locally owned independent institution like the Cap Times.
Folks, that is Paul Fanlon, publisher of the Cap Times. You can check out more about IdeaFest by Googling IdeaFest. Buy your tickets now. Get in on the action. When we come back, I will be joined by my friend and yours, State Senator Kristen Dressler-Alfheim. We re-engage the question, how do Democrats unite to defeat MAGA in 2026 and beyond? Don't go anywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.